This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow. Live from Buku Daiquiris and Cajun Eats on Richmond, this is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, here we go. Hour number two of the show. We do appreciate you being a part of it. It is Buku. It is 5600 Richmond Avenue. You should be here, too. I know someone in the building is hoodatting all the way to Drew Brees tonight because the Redskins and the Saints tonight, Alvin Kamara is his jersey on his T-shirt.
Imagine that. We're at a place called Buku, and they spell it B-E-A-U-X.
Yep.
And there's a Saints fan in the building. What?
But the thing is,
super surprised right now.
I hate to break you. It ain't about the nose ring and number 41 tonight. It's all about number 9. He's 201 yards away from becoming the all-time best quarterback in NFL history in terms of total yardage, passing the ball, and you know he's going to get it. But they're hosting the Redskins. 6-point spread right now. Saints are giving it up, but I see the Saints covering that.
How unfair is it that Drew Brees will go down as one of the best quarterbacks in history? Numbers-wise, otherwise. And on a show this morning, I hear somebody say, he's the best quarterback under 6 foot tall. What kind of dumbass comparison slash point are you trying to make? That dude is one of the best quarterbacks to play football, period.
That's something you
forget his size. Look what he's done. I mean, he's going to break the record tonight. Like, it's why do you have to go in there and say under 6 foot tall?
That's something you say
that's
about
petty.
Doug Flutie.
Yeah, that's petty, yeah.
You say that about Doug Flutie. You say that about a guy that was a flash in the pan but, you know, had a couple of good years. But you definitely don't say that about a guy that's going to throw
over
70,000 yards.
Yeah, a great quarterback
who
consistently, good team or bad team, put up numbers. Yeah, that when I heard that, I was like, you dumbass. I don't even remember who said it, but it was just, oh, whatever. Chris Davis said, I was trying to reach out to y'all earlier, but I'm over here eating some crow on my birthday. Happy birthday, Chris Davis.
Yeah,
he said, Jason Garrett's ineptitude to go for it on 4th and 1. I guess he doesn't have faith in Dak and Zeke, who have converted those 94% of the time. Now, I don't know that to be accurate. I would have to look it up. But if that is true, then, yeah, that would really make me question the play calling or lack of play calling in that regard.
Well, and the thing is, too, you don't have the Texans' offensive line. Even dinged up a little bit, the Cowboys' offensive line is head and shoulders better than the Texans and better than, you know, a good portion of the NFL. They can get it done for you. And you got a guy that can really move the pile. And you only need 1 yard. I question the decision. And it's interesting. It's a tale of two teams. But both teams, the relationship between coach and owner is probably the main reason that the main reason why Bill O'Brien got a 4-year extension. And the other why Jason Garrett hasn't been fired.
Yeah, I think that Jerry Jones likes having Jason Garrett around because he can push him around and he knows he's going to take whatever he dishes out. So,
well, because the big thing, too, is as much as we used to joke about, and I used to say all the time, Rick Smith has a place at the table for Thanksgiving and Christmas at the McNair household. I think Jason Garrett has that same deal going with the Jones family because he hasn't done anything to maintain his job for this long. And he has an offensive coordinator. So you can try and blame Scott Linehan, but the fact of the matter is Scott Linehan works for you, and you used to be an offensive coordinator before you got a head coaching gig. And if it's broke, fix it. And if you don't, it's on you.
I was trying to look up his coaching record.
Well,
he is. Mm-hmm. Wow, really? I didn't think it would be this good. 68-55 is his head coaching record.
It's over 50%.
Yeah, which isn't terrible when you've been around for a while.
But think about the 14-2 season that went awry in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And you know, even when they, you know, they thought they were building something, you know, obviously if you're 14-2 1 year, you may take a little bit of a step back just based on the competition and the level of play around you. But the fact of the matter is they have taken so many steps back and by a large margin, and the way they look now, mediocre at best, with the weapons that they have, skip the receivers.
They should be better. Yeah.
They really should. Because you got one of the best running backs in the game behind you.
Crazy. And his postseason record, 1-2, if you're curious.
I know a couple of them. I think I know who those two belong to, as a matter of fact. So, yeah. I'm not a Jason Garrett fan. I'm obviously not a Bill O'Brien fan. I'm a Deshaun Watson fan, and I'm really starting to worry more and more about the long-term health of the guy that is definitely the franchise quarterback for this team based on what I saw last night.
I agree.
So it'll be interesting. If you guys want to chime in on that, we're welcome to take your calls, and we'll talk about it some more. But we got plenty more to get to as well, because there was a lot happening in college football. That fight this weekend that I know that you and Nick were dialed into is big. So there's lots to get to.
Astros, last I saw, were down 1-0. Is that still the case?
I believe so, yes.
So a couple of things, a couple updates on baseball since we're there. Astros going into the game up 2-0. Brewers sweep the Rockies. Kind of thought – I thought that – that series might be a little more competitive. I had the Brewers winning the series. I did not see a sweep coming, especially when two of the three games were starters or rotation by committee. They did it again. So good for them. Good for Council, your buddy.
Yeah, my buddy. No, I mean, it's huge for the city of Milwaukee. And you look at just how many – it's few and far between. Their only appearance in a World Series was 1982. The last time they even sniffed an opportunity like this to at least get to a league championship series was in 2011. But they're spread out. It's a small market. The fact that they actually went out before the deadlines and acquired some talent that has really stepped up. Moustakas got the big hit in game two. I do worry about their starting pitching. But, boy, I'll tell you what. They got a bullpen and they got a lineup, and that can do some things.
They have a hell of a bullpen.
Yeah.
And the Yankees-Red Sox series tied 1-1. Yankees get a win on the road. 6-2 was the final.
And then the Dodgers-Braves tonight.
Yep. Severino, who's on the hill for the Red Sox? I listed them all here.
Yeah, it's Uvalde.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter, that's huge advantage Yankees, especially at home.
He's pitched well against the Yankees, though. Okay. He's pitched really well against the Yankees the last month of the year. I think he had a 2 or sub-2 ERA. So it's the right guy if you have – Slim Pickens over there in the Red Sox rotation. He might be the right guy to go on the road and get a win. I don't think he's intimidated by the Yankees. He's pitched pretty well. And, like I said, he was hot coming down the stretch. So
the thing that's shocking to me is that the team that had the best record in baseball is seemingly scrambling all over the place, trying to fill holes and manufacture lineups, whereas the Yankees are just coming in, bats up, bats blazing, going, you know what, it doesn't matter. They got the right attitude, the right mindset. Their pitchers are pitching better than they did in the regular season. And it seems like of the two teams, the Yankees feel like they're in control even before they got that game two win. And David Price, if he starts another game for the Red Sox, then that's on Cora. That's ridiculous.
David Price didn't even make it out of the second, or didn't complete two innings, second goes run. An inning and two-thirds, gives up 3 earned runs. Just another dud of a performance in the playoffs. And you have to look at that guy and think, you know what, at this point, do they have any long relievers in that pen that they can throw out there to start a game a la Brewer style and put Price as just mop-up duty in that bullpen? Because as a starter, he's garbage in the playoffs. Absolutely garbage. I want to say he's like 1-10 or something like that.
Oh, he's never won a playoff
game. Atrocious.
He is winless in the playoffs as a starter. And where he looked best was against the Astros last year as a reliever coming in the middle of games.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. You may have to find somebody that can start in his stead and just put him in that bullpen.
Well, the other rarity is that you got a guy that used to start for the Cardinals in Joe Kelly, but the fact that Joe Kelly throws 100 miles an hour, you're like, that could be that guy. But Joe Kelly for 100-mile-an-hour stuff, he just doesn't seem to get it done either. He seems to get hit around. The Astros hit him hard this year.
Yeah.
So the Red Sox, for as much as they like to spend money and they put money into that lineup this year with J.D. Martinez and the ads that they made to try and make that team better, their starting pitching and their pitching staff to me is not impressive at all.
By the way, he's 2-9 in the postseason.
And without a win as a starter.
And he's got a 5.28 ERA.
That ain't good for a guy that used to be the highest paid pitcher in baseball a couple of years, no long more than like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah. So pretty bad.
It's not good.
So. And then finally, the Dodgers-Braves series. Dodgers up 2-1. Braves get a win at home tonight. It's Hill versus Fultonevich.
Fultonevich, if he looks like anything like he did in the first game, the Braves are in trouble.
Yeah, but it's short rest. He only threw, I think, 50 pitches. Mm-hmm. And I think, what's his name, Steniger, or whatever the hell the Braves manager's name is, said that basically it was a workout day for him. It wasn't a, like a complete game where he would go out and pitch 5-6 innings and really go through the motions. It was almost like he got a workout, so he's not worried about that. But Hill, the Braves struggle against lefties, and I have a feeling if you made me pick the game tonight, I would say that this series is over because the Braves really do struggle against lefties.
I think so, too. I think, like you and I have talked about all year, it's a great story. The Braves, they're probably a year or two ahead of where most people had them, but it's a talented team. It's a talented lineup. They're only going to get better. So it's a good story. But as much as I don't want Puig to be right and, you know, and with his arrogance and his cockiness, and you all know how much I can't stand Jock Peterson, but I think it's Dodgers-Brewers for the National League Championship. Yeah, so, okay. We continue to move on. If you want to talk some baseball, we covered that. We got football to get to, and, of course, the big doings this weekend. And the number is 713-780-3776. That's the HRNP listener line. You can call that, you can text that, or you can hit us up on Twitter. Back with more of hour number two. It's the usual suspects live from Buku, 5600 Richmond Avenue, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow, live from Buku Daiquiris and Cajun Eats on Richmond. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, there's a drive, and look out, we got a ball game. George Springer touches them all, and we got a 1-1 tie in Cleveland. Way to go, Stros, as they have tied the game. And remember now, Barry has said that he has put the curse on the Astros. He wants the Indians to win.
Damn right. This guy does.
No one else does. My man sporting the Stros shirt front and center here at Buku, 5600 Richmond. Barry has put the curse on him for reasons known and not very good, by the way.
It's because they wouldn't give me a press pass. They're dead to me. They're dead to me. I hope the Indians sweep the next three games and go on to great things.
That is just ridiculous, dead to me. Mean-spirited, and typical. How about that?
Hey, a couple things. Somebody did say, they texted and said that, or tweeted, and said, Chan has said that the Red Sox actually have put David Price in the bullpen for the rest of the ALDS.
Smart.
Yeah, you could probably send him home, and that would be okay, too. And then I was looking at this, the Red Sox homepage to confirm it. I don't see anything there. But I did see something that I did want to talk about. Did you hear how Aaron Judge was leaving Fenway Park playing New York, New York? And on a boombox, and it ruffled some feathers, and some people got upset.
In front of the Red Sox clubhouse.
Who's the blonde chick on Wake Up?
Oh, the new one?
What, you said you liked her, right?
Laura Rutledge. No, I like Maria.
The blonde chick. Yeah, the blonde chick on Get Out.
Laura
was
Rutledge,
like,
I think her name
was. That's just uncalled for. She must be a Red Sox fan. What is wrong with you? That's not uncalled for. That's funny. That's called baseball. That's called having some fun. Get over yourself. It's a song. They you know what? You don't like it? Beat them. Well, if you don't like it, win your games at home and you don't have to worry about it.
Her whole deal was you can get away with being, you know, talking mess and everything like that in basketball and in football, but you just can't do it in baseball.
Oh,
why not?
Shut
That's
up.
The whole premise of the commercial with Ken Griffey Jr. with the head on backwards. Yeah. Just get over yourself. It's about time you just let the players be themselves, show a little personality, and by the way, have a little fun.
Yeah, and you know what? So that it's a rivalry. It's the Yankees and the Red Sox. They're going to if you're a Yankee and can't troll Red Sox or Red Sox fans, who the hell can you troll?
Right.
To respond to it, somebody told Cora about it. This was his quote, which I thought was actually pretty good. He said, I don't know, maybe one of the guys when we played the Marlins earlier, we had Pitbull on in our boombox. You've got to ask him if it was something for us, but I doubt it. He's a guy that when he hits the ball out of the ballpark, he sits down and runs. That's probably just something they do when they win. Probably they did it somewhere else too.
I'm not buying that. But
I'm not buying it either, but that's Cora taking the high road and being like, you know what, it's just not that big of a deal. I'm not going to get into a war of words.
We can ask Blummer if he took the high road when he was here. Because he didn't. He wanted to fight everybody on team planes
Cora
and
did.
Buses. Yeah, but at least he did that there. Because the other thing is, don't mess with a guy that's as hot as Aaron Judge is right now. The only guy that might be hotter, which is hard for me to say, is Gary Sanchez. Did you see ball that he hit the left center that got out? Like out, like over the monster, over the stadium, onto the street across. I think they had said it was like 475 plus.
Now, Tim Kirchin said something. I love Tim Kirchin, by the way.
Kirchin.
He's great. Probably the happiest dude you'll ever see on TV or not. But he said when Gary Sanchez is going, he's the best hitter on that Yankee team.
No.
Stop it, Tim. You stop it right now.
Yeah, that's...
All things being equal, if everyone's playing to their best, Aaron Judge is the best hitter on that team.
I don't know. I'm just hitter? Does it power one, hitter or just hitter?
Just one guy you wouldn't want to face in that lineup. The one guy, if you had to pick one guy in that lineup that you don't want to face.
Yeah, it's Aaron Judge. Because Aaron Judge is a better hitter for average than Stanton.
Yeah, if they're all hot, who don't you want to face?
Because Gregorius has become a good hitter, average wise. He's continued to get better. But, yeah.
He's not going
to
hurt you.
Right, and if you want the fear in the batter's box, that Aaron, no one brings more fear than what Aaron Judge can do.
Exactly.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
I mean, I get Gary Sanchez when he's hot. He can hit for power. He can, you know, he can drive in some runs and all this and that. But you're not scared of Gary. You're scared of Gary Sanchez, but not like you would be with Aaron Judge.
If you're a Yankee fan, you're scared he's going to screw up behind the plate, can't stop a ball.
Defensively.
And defensively can't do anything right.
Yeah.
So you think they wrap that? Well, no, that's right. That's a series could go a while. So that's 1-1 tonight.
Yeah, I think this series goes 5.
Yeah, I think it does too. But again, the Red Sox pitching is what scares me the most.
Yeah.
So, all right.
A lot of upsets in college football this week.
A lot.
Lots.
Including in the Red River shootout turned out to be just that.
Yeah, we already heard from OU Mike. He's down and out.
Texas fans, I'm sure Raheel is really jacked up. That was a big win for them.
That was a huge win. Here's the list of upsets in order. We'll start with the teams, the higher-ranked teams. So, number 22, Florida beats number 5, LSU, 27-19. Number 19, Texas defeats number 7, OU, 48-45. Mississippi State knocks off number 8, Auburn, 23-9. Giggum, Aggs beat number 13, Kentucky, 20-14 in overtime. Utah goes in and beats up Stanford, 40-21. Stanford was ranked 14. Northwestern beats number 20, Michigan State, 29-19. And Iowa State defeated number 25, Oklahoma State, 48-42. So a lot of teams in the top 25. Boy, the poll now is just topsy-turvy.
It's crazy.
5, 7, 8, 13, 14, 20, and 25 all lose. I didn't see some of the other scores yet, but when I saw Texas put it on OU, I thought there's a chance that Texas could end up in the top 10. If certain things happen and some teams lose and this, that, and the other, they could jump up quite a bit. They did. They move up to number 9 in the latest poll that's out. You think they're a top 10 team?
For Herman
is
at this, Texas. Yeah.
Are they a top 10 team?
I don't think
legitimately?
So. Not legitimately, but I think rightfully so this week because of how big the win was with, like you mentioned, all the different losses around it. I don't think they'll end up there. But I think that was the signature win that Herman needed for that program.
You think they beat West Virginia or they lose to West Virginia? Is that why you?
I do. I really do. And you look, I think West Virginia is, but West Virginia brings an offense to the table that they haven't really seen anything like that yet. I think that'll be interesting. I was surprised Oklahoma didn't do more to them. Did you see the stat? I thought it was crazy in the Aggie game. Kentucky did not cross the 50 after halftime offensively until overtime when they got the ball on the 35.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Back to Texas real quick, though, because that's okay. They've played 6 games. They're 5-1. 3 of their 6 games were against ranked opponents at the time. USC was 22, beat them 37-14. TCU was 17, beat them 31-16. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma was ranked 7th going into this game, beat them 48-45.
So you're a believer?
I think I am. I honestly am. At the beginning when they lost to Maryland, they struggled a little bit against Tulsa. You started wondering what's going on. Then they came out and put it on USC. I didn't think they'd win that game. It was kind of the tale of who's real in that game, USC or Texas. And then since then, they've rattled off 4 wins in a row against USC, TCU, KSU, and Oklahoma. So I think you have to believe in them until you see otherwise. The only real big test they have left is that West Virginia game.
I'll tell you,
if they run the table – it's going to be interesting. If they run the table and they're a one-loss team in the Big 12, you think about, are you going to have a Big 12 representative in the playoffs, or are you going to not have a Big 12 representative in the playoffs?
Because everybody pretty much had penciled in Oklahoma.
Yeah, they got to win the conference championship.
Yep. So but they can't slip up, but they have an opportunity to be considered. So that's all you can ask for, especially with the slow start that they got off to.
So speaking of that, we talked about the top the top five teams in the poll. And let me give you the poll real quick. Just starting backwards at 10. UCF is 10, Texas 9, Penn State 8, Washington 7, moved, and all those teams moved up. West Virginia 6, Notre Dame 5, Clemson 4, Ohio State 3, Georgia 2, Bama 1. Texas the biggest mover up, moved up 10 spots to number 9. Auburn the biggest mover, moved down, dropped 13 spots to number 21.
Yeah, Tad Brown wasn't happy about that.
Yeah, and then four teams that weren't ranked last week are now ranked in the top 25. A&M at 22, South Florida at 23, Mississippi State at 24, Cincinnati at 25. So that poll's out of the way. Of these teams, they're all undefeated at 6-0. We're going to three questions for you. Which one loses first? Which one is for sure going undefeated? And which one is not making the playoffs? So it's Bama, Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson, and Notre Dame.
Schedule-wise,
which one
alone,
loses first?
The two that have the best chance to run the table are Ohio State and Notre Dame.
Okay.
Based on
Notre Dame, I think for sure has the best.
They're both favored to win the rest of the games on their schedule. Alabama, you know, is going to run into at least one big SEC game, and they still have the SEC championship game. I can see Georgia slipping up. Clemson definitely righted the ship this last week, but they're not as impressive as in years past. So I'd say of the two that I think either Georgia or Clemson, I think Clemson, I would say, would be the first one to slip up.
Do you think Clemson's the first one to lose?
Yeah, who do you think?
So you think that's what, next week at North Carolina State?
It's a good game. It's possible.
Okay. I'm going to say Georgia is going to be the first one to lose. They've got LSU next week, Florida the following week, and then Kentucky the week after that, followed by Auburn. They're losing one of those games. Their next four games are against all still-ranked opponents. LSU at 13, Florida 14.
Is Auburn still ranked?
Yeah, 21. So you've got 13, 14, 18, and 21 in that order over the next four games for Georgia. Bama's Bama. It doesn't really matter.
Right.
But pretty much a cakewalk. Their two toughest games left are LSU. Well, three ranked opponents: LSU, Mississippi State, and Auburn. They're beating all them.
There's the team that let me down the most. Just when I started believing LSU finally had a quarterback, they were going to be good, they lose at the Swamp.
And Ohio State's got it pretty easy. They've got one ranked opponent left in Michigan.
Yeah, that's what I said. Their schedule is easy.
Notre Dame's got the easiest, though. They've got Pitt, Navy, Northwestern, Florida State, Syracuse, and USC. So to answer that second question, who might run the table?
Yeah,
I think Notre Dame has the best chance of running the table.
When you look at Ohio State, would be second
because Alabama does have to face a couple of ranked teams left. Yeah, and I'm with you. Ohio State second. Clemson still has North Carolina State and a pretty good Duke team. They're not going to lose to Duke. I think their biggest threat right now is North Carolina State, and maybe if they aren't prepared for South Carolina at the end of the season, but. I think for the most part they win that game. So who's the team not making the playoffs for you of those five?
I think it's Georgia.
I'm with you. That would be the team that I would think wouldn't make it. Even though I think that, you know, they've got a pretty tough schedule and they're going to have to face Alabama. I think Notre Dame runs the table.
They still got a quarterback controversy, too, that they're already talking about making a switch just like Clemson went through.
I think they might be the only team that loses, and it's going to be in their conference championship game. So, yeah, I think your top four, your playoffs, could be Bama, Ohio State, Clemson, and Notre Dame.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that one. So, okay, we're going to continue to roll on. We're midway through the show. That means we still got 90 minutes to go. If you want to join us, something on your mind you want to get off your chest, 713-780-3776, call, text, or hit us up on Twitter. Before we head to the break, I do want to tell you about the people at Fitz Roofing. I know that a lot of you people are still dealing with issues from the hurricane. A lot of you people just need a new roof or need repairs done to your roof. And the people that you've heard from and the people that are trying to get your business are storm chasers and deposit thieves, and they just want your money up front so they can do shoddy work and then skip town with all of your cash. Well, you need to contact the people at Fitz Roofing because they're locally owned and operated, and they believe in the people of Houston and the surrounding communities, and they're here for you in times like this. They use only CertainTeed products, and CertainTeed products are the best in the business, so much so that they are a CertainTeed Select Shingle Master company. Only 1% of the roofers in the United States meet this criteria, and they have this elite status. Their base warranties are longer than your average roofer, and they will take care of you before, during, and after the sale. Not only do they do an outstanding job on your roof, they also care about the community. 10% of their profits go back to a nonprofit called Fits for Families. Essentially, what it does is it helps people that need roofing repairs or replacements but can't afford to pay for them. That's what this great program does. They have an A-plus rating on the Better Business Bureau. 5-star ratings on Facebook and Home Advisor. Why don't you get in contact with them now? FitzRoofing.com or FitzRoofing via the phone, 832-521-3001. Either way, free, no obligation inspection, and let the process go from there. Just rest assured when I tell you, Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
You can now listen to all your favorite shows on the Amazon Echo.
Oh, sweet, dude.
Just say, Alexa, open ESPN 97.5.
Now playing ESPN 97.5.
Point one.
This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow. Live from Buku Daiquiris and Cajun Eats on Richmond, this is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sharara.
I don't want to talk. Mate. Smash me.
I can
smash you. Say send your send location. Here it is right here in front of you. Here's my location, you little fool. Right in front of you. Do something about it. Do something about it. Yeah, you'll do nothing.
McGregor fires the knee, appeared to just miss. Massive right from Nurmagomedov! And a knee from McGregor
now! Nasty right hand.
Hey, here we go. Second half of the show. 90 in the books. 90 still to go. We are at Buku, 5600 Richmond Avenue. Stop by and see us. It is unbelievable. Eats, great treats like daiquiris. Baseball games on. Lots of people here enjoying the food and beverage. You should, too. We'll be here till 4 o'clock right here on The Usual Suspects. Barry and I are here. The promo team is here. Nick is there. And I know that you guys were very interested in what we just heard. I actually caught up with it and paid attention to it, thanks to you guys. But there was a lot of action coming out of that UFC fight event this weekend.
Good times indeed. I didn't catch the entire card, but I did catch the four fights that mattered the most, which were the last four. Where you want to start, Nick? You want to start with that Pettis-Ferguson fight? Because, my goodness, I think that might have been fight of the night if it weren't for Khabib and Conor McGregor's trainer going at it. That ended up being fight of the night.
Totally agreed.
That was a good-ass fight, though.
That was a great fight.
And yeah, honestly, that was a great fight.
Pettis, you know, he showed, you know, I guess everybody just kind of gave Ferguson the win, but Pettis really showed that it wasn't going to be as easy of a fight. We always talked about his, you know, the fact that he's kind of injury prone, but he came out and showed that he can really compete against Tony Ferguson. And if you ask me, I think Tony Ferguson is the one that deserves the next title shot against Khabib, but that's another discussion.
Yeah, I agree with you, though. But I think he needs one or two more fights to test that knee, because they were talking about it during the broadcast. But 6 months, I don't know if that's enough time for a complete rehabilitation. I mean, he looked well. He's limping. Pettis went right after that knee, which was my concern going into that fight. But, yeah, it sucks that Pettis broke his hand, because I would have loved to have seen another round, not just the two that they got in. But, yeah, that was a great fight. That OSP Dominic Reyes fight, at least we got to be introduced fully if you weren't paying attention to Dominic Reyes.
I'm a fan now.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, he looked good. And then there was the Derek Lewis Volkov fight, the Alexander Volkov Derek Lewis fight. I missed some of it. Ooh. And I was pretty upset that I did, but I caught the last round. So catch me up on what happened in the first two rounds that I missed, because I'm pretty sure from all accounts that Derek was losing this fight.
Right. Well, first off, if we do ever get Derek Lewis back on the show, we're not revealing that I picked against him. That's number one. Number two, he almost lost in the first round. Like, my pick would have been right if Derek Lewis didn't have such an amazing chin. Like, that guy can absolutely take a beating. And you got to love his honesty. You got to love his personality. I think AJ was the one who tipped me off to his Instagram follow. Joe Rogan mentioned it after the fight as well. He is a great Instagram follow. So if he continues to evolve.
He jumped up almost 300,000 followers after that.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And I hope he does get a title shot. He said he's not ready for one. He kind of made fun of himself about his cardio.
Yeah, he did.
I thought that was interesting. Actually, I have the audio here if you guys want to listen.
Ladies and gentlemen, referee Herb Dean has called a stop to this contest at 4 minutes, 49 seconds of the third round, declaring the winner by knockout, Derek the Black Beast Lewis.
I'm here with the winner, Derek Lewis. Derek, why'd you take your pants off?
My balls was hot.
I understand. Listen, man, what you just did was absolutely phenomenal. That was an incredible comeback victory, and it shows one of the reasons why people love to watch you fight, that you can put it all to bed with one shot.
I told them, boys, I got no more heart. You know, they keep underestimating me. I ain't all that technical and all that, but I'm getting there.
No one will question your heart, sir, after this. This is a come-from-behind knockout, the likes that we haven't seen in a long time. And you were looking for that big haymaker all night. You found it in the last minute of the fight.
I forgot. A few hours before the fight, Donald Trump called me and told me I got knocked this Russian out because they're making him look bad on the news. You know, him and Putin, they talking about USA and his whole.
That's the
USA
fun.
In this hole is so good. There's so many great quotes out of that Derek Lewis post-fight interview.
And what we can't – didn't he also say something about what he's going to do after this? And he said something like, I'm going to get my wife's legs in there.
No, that was on the broadcast afterwards. They brought him on, and he was talking. He said, what are you going to do after this? He's like, I'm going to throw my wife's legs in there and see what happens. But
that's
the
fantastic.
But the whole, why'd you take your pants off, my ball.
Yeah, that was fantastic. That was hilarious. But yeah, it looks like we lost Joel and Barry. They're over at Buku on Richmond and Chimney Rock. We'll try to get them back over the air as soon as possible. We'll take a quick break. We just recapped UFC 229. I'm sure we'll talk more Astros and Texans. It's the usual suspects on ESPN 97.5. Do not go anywhere.
Chill.
Call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net.
This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow. Live from Buku Daiquiris and Cajun Eats on Richmond, this is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, here we go. Still second hour of the show. It's The Usual Suspects on a Monday from Buku, 5600 Richmond Avenue. Stop by and see us. Corner of Richmond and Chimney Rock. Great food, unbelievable daiquiris. And let me tell you something. Great spot to watch the games, whether it be baseball now, football tonight. And literally, Barry and I ate lunch here. And
man, yeah, I mean, it's not just lip service when you say great food.
Nope.
It is legit good food.
No doubt about it. Andreas, when he's not busy digging in the candy jar, ate a alligator burger earlier, gator and hamburger, I believe.
Nice.
Sandwich that they made.
Have you ever had alligator?
I passed on the opportunity.
It's not bad. It's not bad at all.
Mm-mm. I had a wallet.
You ever had snake?
I had a wallet. Does that count? No? No snake either, thanks.
You ever had frog legs?
No.
I've had all three of those.
No.
All good.
You ever had, prefer the snake, don't you?
You've had octopus?
No.
No?
No.
Man, you're missing out.
Oh, no, wait.
Calamari.
Yeah, I've had calamari.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we were talking UFC, Derek Lewis. One point I wanted to make before we talk about Conor McGregor and Habib. The thing about Derek, man, it's been like this his whole career. He's got that one-punch knockout, And even when he fought Jake Roschalt, like, he was losing to Jake Roschalt before he knocked him out. And that's what you have to be worried about with Derek. And he proved it. With 11 seconds left, he gets the knockout. He's never out of the fight until the fight is over. And if you rest, even with 15 seconds left in the fight, he can turn the entire tide of the fight. And he proved that again. And I think Joe Rogan said it best, man. It was one of the best come-from-behind knockouts in a long, long time. I respect what he said because I feel like it's true. He's not ready for a title fight without a gas tank. Let me tell you what. When he fought Ngannou, that was a terrible fight. His gas tank was terrible. This fight, you could tell he was dog tired as well. Put him in a ring with Daniel Cormier, whose cardio he's got cardio for days. Even as big as he is, that could be ugly.
Well, and you know what? He didn't even look near the shape he was in for his previous fight. But the fact, like you said, the fact that he was able to admit it. But when you pack a punch like he does, and that two punch combination that he threw to put an end to that thing, whoo, that was devastating.
Yeah, he's got that knockout power. Nick, what were your thoughts on the whole McGregor fight before we get into the controversy?
On just the performance in the cage, you mean?
Yeah,
I mean, it was just, it's what I expected. I knew that Khabib was a more dominant wrestler. I felt like he could match up with him in terms of striking, and that's exactly what he did. It was actually an absolute dominance for 4.5 rounds or however long it was by Khabib. And Khabib was completely confident in his ability, and he actually showed it. And the fact that he was able to drop him, which is supposed to be Conor's forte, that speaks so well and so highly of Khabib. So he's without a doubt the best fighter in that division.
I'll tell you what, though. I was impressed with McGregor on the ground. I felt like he was outclassed by Khabib, but he was a lot better, and it made him look like a much more well-rounded fighter than I think I was giving him credit for. And he's obviously been working on it because his ground game wasn't this good in fights past. I thought he looked pretty damn good on the ground. It took Khabib some time to really get the position he wanted to get into versus Conor, because I think Conor was doing a good job of basically just stalling on the ground, which a lot of times when you're facing want to do, you'll a perfect example. It didn't happen in this case, but an example of stalling on the ground is when you'll see a guy in the ground and all they'll do is just almost hug them, pull to the chest. That's just you stalling and hoping that the referee says, all right, there's no action, stand it up, because
yeah, and I think
up front, it obviously wore on him, and he got tired.
Right, and look, he did show some good grappling defense in the beginning part of the round, but you have to be able to do that for an entire fight, and I don't know if he was going to be able to do that, and he showed that the wrestling was going to be an issue. The good thing, you know, he showed that he can defend himself against wrestlers sometimes. We saw the Chad Mendes fight. He kind of weathered the storm early and was able to turn around. So he does deserve some credit from the grappling defense part for sure. But what did you think of the post-fight brawl?
Here's my point on it. So a lot of people are like, oh, it was classless. I think, number one, and I tweeted this out, it's amazing how quickly the good guy can become the bad guy and the bad guy can become the good guy. I think a lot of people looked at that and felt sorry for Conor McGregor in a way, because he got cheap-shotted, because he got jumped from behind. And I think a lot of people looked at that and looked at Khabib and said, that dude's an animal. There's no class involved with that. But I tell you what, it's it's like there was a Chris Rock joke where he talked about O.J. Simpson killing Nicole Brown Simpson. And he said, look, I'm not saying he should have done it, but I understand, because he talked about all the different things that she had done, and it's a really funny joke if you go listen to it. But that was the point I was making about what he did, what Khabib did. I'm not saying he should have done it, but I completely understand, and I really don't have a problem with it. And I think you have to separate what he did versus what McGregor did. He went after one person. McGregor threw a dolly through a bus full of people and damaged and injured a lot of people on that bus and not the intended target. So to me, it was two different things completely.
You're saying the remarks he made about his father?
I'm talking, that's the reason that he went after McGregor's jiu-jitsu coach. He talked about his dad. He talked about his religion. He talked about his country. He said so many things that at some point you can be, you know, you can talk a lot of trash like Conor McGregor does, and that's fine. But there are some guys that just don't play that. They just and so many obviously Habib is one of those guys.
I heard so many people say Habib's one of these guys where he doesn't hear any of that. It doesn't have an effect on him, but it obviously does. He just kept it inside as long as he could, and it just came to a head after the fight.
Well, it can't get it. You can make him mad. You just can't make him mad to the point where you're going to throw him off his game. And I think that's what he did. He just got him mad, just not mad enough to throw him off his game. Habib knew he was a better fighter. One comment on the cheap shot and the fact that he got jumped. Look at the video. I just retweeted it right now at the producer Nick. Connor, without a doubt, threw the first cheap shot. But it's so hard to see in the camera angle. When Habib jumped the fence, one of his teammates tried to jump the fence to defend him, wasn't able to get over the fence before he even looked up. He was not even looking at Connor. Connor threw the first left hand. I just retweeted the video at the producer Nick. Connor McGregor, without a doubt, threw the first punch. So don't act like you got cheap-shotted for no reason. You got cheap-shotted because you threw the first punch. That's number one. Number two, in regards to what people should do with Habib, you get a one-year suspension. Anything more than that is an absolute crime. Reapply for your license and move on, because the UFC is absolutely an enabler in this situation. All right? When you sit there and you play the videos from the bus incident and you include it into the promos, what you've done to Connor is tell him that's okay. Even if you went in the back office and you said, Connor, but that bus incident was absolutely unacceptable. You can't do that. And then you include it in the promos to promote UFC 229. You're telling Connor McGregor indirectly that your behavior is okay. So don't think for one second the UFC doesn't have any responsibility in this. And Dana White and Joe Rogan, please stop saying this is disrespectful and this is disgusting and this is a black eye to the sport when you continue to play those promos leading up to the fight. Any other company in the world, take the Rockets, for example, Joel, when Chad got fired. When you publish something that's bad, that makes your media outlet look bad or your company look bad, what happens? 9 times out of 10, they delete the tweet, they publish another one, and they say, look, this is not a good representation of our company. We apologize, in so many words. Not the UFC. This is a black eye in our sport. Look at this video, and we're going to continue to replay it over and over and over again. And what do you think Conor McGregor's ego is going to do when you let that happen? It's going to blow up. So I have no problem with Habib doing that. He should not have jumped the fence. He should get suspended, and he should be able to fight in a year. It should not be some incredibly long suspension. I think it's BS.
It shocks me, Nick, that you say a year, because that seems to me like a very long period of time, because you heard that they kept the purse money and that Dana White was adamant that there was going to be, you know, a fine for sure and possible suspension. I didn't think, and to me, and you guys tell me because you know the sport, I don't, that a year seems to be excessive. But the fact of the matter, to Nick's point, the one thing I will say is, because of Derek Lewis's quotes, which are being plastered all over social media and everyone's getting a kick out of it, everybody thinking is great, and then because of the post-fight melee, UFC can say all they want lip service-wise. They are getting a ton of run that they wouldn't have gotten otherwise, and everyone is talking about it today.
Well, to the outside observer of the sport that don't follow the sport, they're going to see that and say, see, that's why MMA should be banned. But people that pay attention to the sport and understand the sport know what that was about. To me, the people that are the most thrilled about this is exactly what Nick was saying, is the UFC. Dana White, when that happened, I guarantee you the first thing he thought is, oh, my God, this is terrible. Then the second thing he thought is, well, promoting the rematch is going to be easy now. Because now you can use the bus footage and you can use this jumping out of the cage footage and you've got the makings of a $5 million pay-per-view buy if you market it right. And I'm exaggerating the numbers. They're not going to sell $5 million. But they're going to sell more pay-per-views than they did this time, because the people that did miss it are going to want to watch it again for the outside stuff that goes on. So there's nobody happier that this happened in the long run. And I said this when Connor threw the dolly through the bus. There's nobody happier that this happened in the UFC, because this is going to make marketing the rematch so much easier and so much more profitable.
And who's the common denominator here? Who's the common denominator? It's Connor McGregor. When there was water bottles being thrown at a press conference, it was a fighter versus who? Conor McGregor. When a fighter decided to go to a bus with 50 people, like an absolute Virginia, and throw a dolly at a bus, who was involved? Conor McGregor. In this incident, Conor McGregor. And everybody wants to blame Habib. That's absolute nonsense to me. It's absolute nonsense. It's just dumb. Conor McGregor is the one that's doing that.
By the way, I am going to disagree with you, though, on who got the first cheap shot in. When I was watching it, after Khabib went into the cage, now, the video that you tweeted, I don't know if that was before or after this happened, but McGregor is standing off by himself, and one of Habib's friends or cornermen or whatever comes in a red shirt, comes running from the stands, jumps the cage, and sucker punches McGregor from behind.
After Conor McGregor threw the first punch. It's in the video.
But still, he threw a first punch at a guy that was in front of him.
No, he wasn't. He was in front of him. He was in front of him, but he was sitting on the cage, and he was trying to jump the cage, not even looking at Conor. Look at the punch. The guy was not even looking at Conor when he got punched. It just wasn't as egregious of a cheap shot. He threw the first punch. Don't be a baby when you get jumped. Don't be a baby.
I like it. You guys are getting fired up.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to disagree with you on that, but I think otherwise we're on the same page as far as it's, to me, this is two completely different things. And you know, it's going after one guy. There was one person in Habib's sights, and it was McGregor's jiu-jitsu coach, which I don't even know his damn name. I don't really care. But that was the target of his frustration and of his anger. Now, what I said is, if he was smart, he would have waited. I would have waited until they raised my hand and put the belt around my waist, because that's the time when both corners and their cornermen are in the ring. If you really wanted to get a shot at him, you could have waited until you were side by side and they raised your hand and then put that belt around your waist. And you could have taken that belt off and attacked the dude right there in the ring. That would have been a lot smarter than what he did.
All right, hey, it's getting a little bit interesting in here. And along the airwaves, we like to have it that way, so we'll continue to roll on. We got two in the books. We got one more to go in the big show. So if you want to get in on the discussion, why don't you join us? 713-780-3776 or hit us up on Twitter. The final hour is next. It's the usual suspects, ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.